today. Thank you for tuning in to Off the Hour. If you're interested in the issues raised in today's show, and if you want to help the plight of the Palestinian people, please keep your eyes peeled for an upcoming fundraiser at La Sala Rosa this coming Monday, the 23rd of October, organized by our very own Jack here at the station. It's set to be a night of music and a lot of fun, and hopefully a lot of money raised. That's this coming Monday, 23rd of October, La Sala Rosa, 4848 St. Laurent Boulevard. Thank you again for listening, and stay tuned for more People Powered Radio.
And so I want to thank, first of all, Brick Pa Brick for hosting us. It's a live transmission. And also to our panelists. I will maybe first start to introduce each panelist, and we'll go that way. And you'll hear about their respective work. So I'd just ask each panelist to briefly introduce themselves. And we'll start just here beside me, Hubert Jérôme Blay, who's an artist and has been involved in housing organizing at a community-based level for a bunch of years in different capacities. So maybe just briefly introduce yourself and also the recent project that you've been working on.
Yeah, hi, thank you. So I'm Hubert Jérôme Blay. I'm part of the collective Réverbération d'une crise, une enquête sonore sur le logement à Montréal. Réverbération d'une crise is a sound inquiry project made on the housing crisis in Tiaguiague, Montreal, made by a collective of tenants. Our goal was to make the housing crisis heard, and more specifically some, let's say, existential, philosophical, maybe more personal also point of views.
Thank you so much. And we'll hear a bit more about this initiative, cultural initiative. After Hubert is Gaurav Sharma, who is a community organizer at the Immigrant Worker Center. You work a lot here in Park Extension. So yes. Please just introduce yourself and your work.
Yes, my name is Gaurav Sharma. I'm working with the IWC Immigrant Worker Center located at Van Horne. My organization focuses on labor rights, worker rights, and also participating in a lot of housing revolutions, and also working with the Park X communities peoples. As an Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshis, so such thing. So we focus on these issues day by day.
Respect. Yeah. And Amy Darwish is next, who works with Comité d'Action de Parc Extension, CAPE. Amy is also involved in many other community projects, has been a longtime organizer at Solidarity Cross Borders and many other initiatives. And you work also here in Parc Extension. But today you're focused on your work around housing. So maybe you could briefly introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi, everyone. So I organize with the Comité d'Action de Parc Extension. We're a group that supports Park Extension tenants in fighting, in defending their housing rights through assemblies, rallies, creative actions, and demonstrations. We fight evictions, gentrification, and displacement. We also believe that housing is an essential need and not a commodity. And we believe in particular in social and community housing as an important alternative to the private market. We also believe that it's impossible for Park X tenants to defend their housing rights if they don't have status. So we also support the struggle for regularization for all non-status migrants.
Thank you so much, Amy. And for those listening, you can hear there's a lot of awesome people here. So keep it locked on 90.3 FM. And also shout out to a few people who've joined us. There's a live audience here. And that's super cool that people have showed up to listen in person. Drew Oja Jay is a community activist and particularly has been working to create alternative media projects in the last few years. So maybe you could introduce the media projects that you're involved in. And also I know that you've been working to address and cover the housing crisis through these media initiatives?
Sure. Yeah. My name's Drew. I'm not a housing activist, I should say, but I am the publisher of The Breach and executive director of CUTV, community TV here in Montreal. And I'd say just like one of the key challenges I think we have as independent media is figuring out how to effectively counter how the sort of conservative rage farming machine, the fine-tuned social media like machine that they've created has really seized the initiative on the discontent with the housing situation, and how the political right has presented itself inaccurately as the sort of alternative to the status quo when it comes to housing. We're really preoccupied, I think, with that angle and really the sort of public education aspect of this struggle.
Thank you so much, Drew. Faiz, we're here at Brick Public. You're the director here. So introduce yourself and also just describe where we are for people who are listening, maybe who haven't been to Brick Public. It's an amazing project.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for having me. And I'm so happy to be hosting you all. And it's tough
thanks
to be...
Thanks for having us.
Well, there you go. It's tough to be following everyone because they've been doing a lot of hard work for a long time. So I'm not sure how I can contribute to this conversation, but I'm going to do my best. What we're doing here, we're at the Brick by Brick Community Center, and it's a great example of the kind of work we're trying to do. Basically, we're trying to build social purpose real estate, especially social housing, something that we've been working on since 2016, and we've sort of like had to face a lot of the challenges that this implies. And the biggest challenge that we've had to face is financing. And so we're looking to like find solutions to that problem. The way that we were able to purchase this duplex and transform it from a commercial ice cream factory into a community center was to issue community bonds. So we encourage people in our community that wanted to stand in solidarity with people who had who were struggling with social injustice to invest in our project. So we're looking to do a similar thing with other housing projects. We have a housing project in partnership with the government that we're building. It's actually, we just learned yesterday that the construction is going to start in the spring. So that's really exciting. We're working with everyone trying to fill the gap, you know, because I think everyone's doing hard work, but we just want to be useful and do whatever it is that we can to make things happen.
Yeah. Thank you, Faiz. And also just for people who are listening, wherever you are in the city or outside of Montreal, Geoghegan, we're in relatively, you know, we're in the city and we're in this community center that has, as Faiz has mentioned, a commercial space has been transformed into a community space. And I think it's so important, physical spaces where we can gather. So thanks again for hosting us. Nathan, you have been organizing for a number of years in Milton Park, which has an important history of building housing alternatives. I'd like to get into that, but just briefly, could you introduce yourself and speak about the organization that you work with?
Sure. And also just first thing to say is also I have a bit of a stutter, so sometimes I get a bit stuck on my words, but more than welcome to complete my sentences if you know what I'm thinking telepathically. I'm a community activist with the Milton Park Citizens Committee, and they've been around in the neighborhood of Milton Park, and we can talk more later on about the community housing project that they helped create, and our work I guess crosses over a lot of different areas, and I guess it's all about mobilizing people in the neighborhood to take action and concretely transform our neighborhood, whether it's through housing, whether it's through ecology, food security, in also organizing in solidarity with the unhoused community, and also going beyond housing to build a democratic economy.
Well, that's a lot, and I would just like want to shout out everybody here for addressing all the work that you're doing, which is actually quite different but connected. I think that often in major media coverage of the housing crisis, we end up talking about, you know, maybe a particular law or a proposed bill. Like right now, there's a lot of discussion around Bill 31. But underneath Bill 31, there's so many systemic issues, but also ongoing long-term organizing work that a lot of you are involved in or are trying to cover as independent media. So I think maybe we could just start there, because it is a particular moment where there's a focus on a particular proposed legislation in Quebec that will attack the rights of tenants to transfer their leases. It's sort of a mechanism of solidarity between tenants that will affect a lot of people. But often the way this bill is covered, as it's almost as if it's in isolation. But of course, it's part of a broader quote unquote housing bill, which really is about attacking the right to housing in a lot of ways on the part of the CAQ government here in Quebec. So my first question to all of you is if you could maybe reflect on the importance of the struggle against Bill 31, but looking at it in that broader context, because, you know, Bill 31 doesn't happen in isolation of municipal policy or federal policy or in isolation of the daily community work that a lot of you are involved in. So maybe would somebody like to jump in? Faiz?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's absolutely, I feel like it's tough. This bill is definitely going to have, if it's passed, a very, very adverse impact on the lives of tenants, on their communities, and on our city, and what makes our city so special. I think we all can speak to like some of the impacts we're afraid that this bill will have. But I think what I'd like to hear is, like, what are we doing to organize, right? What are we doing to get around this? What are we doing to fight this bill? And yeah, I don't know. What are folks doing?
Well, a lot. And that's, it's so great to be at a space where we can discuss those points of mobilization here at Brick Fabric. So I'll just open it up again. Would anybody like to address this point?
Yeah, maybe I think that,
Hubert?
Yeah. I think that you're right, Faiz. And I'm really glad that you mentioned this. Like, one of the most terrible aspect of the housing crisis, in fact, of course, the impacts on the individual lives is big, but it's also like changing like the collective experience of the city, like the spaces that we share, the ambiences, the how we could just like live without being like so stressed and like surrounded by like condos and like expensive shops and all that. And that's one of the things that emerge really from our process of research through sound. Often we focus on like the individual dimension, but like Montreal is changing and not for the best. Well, in many ways. In terms of organizing, there's a new initiative, well, relatively new initiative called the FLIP, which is the Front d'Immobilier, Front de Libération pour un Immobilier Populaire. I'm not sure there's an official like English translation. The meaning is pretty clear. They're actually launching a campaign, and the strategy right now is to do a demonstration every Thursday, starting at Berry-UQAM Metro Square, Émilie Gamelin, at 6 p.m. So this is one thing. They're also having like different angles of struggle, like documenting the bad actions, put it quickly, of landlords and other aspects. But it's really a grassroots and community organizing. And we have to spread the word. This struggle, of course, has potentially to be like one of the main struggle in Montreal for the times to come.
And there's also been other policies that have attacked housing rights under the CAQ government, Coalition Avenir de Québec. There is the total cut of accès logis, which is an important policy change that affected a lot of potential social housing projects. But I know that you, Amy, deal with these things often here in Park Extension, like on a daily level, but also in terms of thinking about how to build, you know, as Faiz was talking about, what are people or how are people organizing?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess one thing I would say is that, like, while there's definitely things about Bill 31 that are, you know, that are definitely, like, deeply terrifying and a very, like, clear attack on tenant rights, it isn't, it's part of a much bigger process, right? Like, Bill 31 is very much sort of rooted in a bigger approach, but not just by the CAQ, but by pretty much every single ruling political party on all level of government to sort of to cater to the interests of real estate developers and the private sector at the expense of tenants. You mentioned the cut of the cutback of accès logis. That's obviously one very clear manifestation of it, and one that has serious impacts here in Park X. It threatens a lot of the victories we've been able to win through, like, tenant mobilization in the last few years, in the sense that there have been sites that tenants have won and that are now sitting empty because the funding no longer exists to develop them. Another part of Bill 31 that people don't really talk about, but is every bit as worrisome, is that they've gone and replaced, you know, wording around giving money for social housing to housing more generally. And they're calling for HLMs that are sitting empty, that they can be sold and replaced with so-called affordable housing, which isn't affordable to most people. This, again, isn't new, but there is a very clear effort here to sort of try to profit off the housing crisis and use it as a means to fund private interests. If there's anything that has maybe been useful about Bill 31, is I think, like, it's very clearly hit a nerve for a lot of people. Both Faiz and Hubert talked about it, in the sense of it risks changing the face of Montreal as we know it. And I think it resonates with people and has sparked a lot of mobilization. I think it very clearly shows the CAQ for who they are, and highlights their contempt for working class tenants. And I do think it's very important to continue to push the mobilization forward, and, you know, fight not only for Bill 31 to be repealed, but also for broader goals such as, you know, a rent freeze, such as the decommodification of housing, and
Sorry, I just wanted to draw out one very important point you mentioned, Amy, which was tangible organizing victories here in Park X. And I just think that there will be people listening who maybe haven't heard about those. Could you just maybe highlight one example of that sort of long-term community organizing that you've been involved in here through CAPE?
Sure. So maybe a very clear example would maybe be the recent the victory around 700 Jarry West. It's a former garage station. It's a garage located in the north of the neighborhood that a cooperative that was led by and for tenants of the neighborhood had been fighting for 10 years. It was sold to a private developer in 2020 who wanted to then turn around and build luxury apartments on the site. Park X tenants kind of mobilized around it, actually succeeded in blocking the luxury apartment development project, which is the first time that's happened in the neighborhood to date, but kept the struggle going until the city actually ended up acquiring that site. We're continuing to fight to make sure that it ends up being, like, a project that's led by, you know, by the neighborhood, that is social and community housing.
Thanks so much for highlighting that. The sort of daily support work that happens in a community group like CAPE, there's also casework, people facing eviction. And I wanted to turn to you, Gaurav, because I know that that's also related to a lot of the work you do at the Immigrant Worker Center. And, you know, being familiar with the organization, I'm actually on the board, so I'm following and supporting as much as I can. And I know that you're dealing with a lot of the daily pressures that new immigrants, refugee claimants, non-status people in Park Extension, but also beyond, face. So could you maybe talk about the housing crisis as it relates to your work?
Yes. My English is not good, but I'm trying to, what I'm observing in the parks, not in the park, it's Laval, La Salle. There's a lot of people who are residing over there.
Thank you.
Yes. So the people who's migrated in Canada are either they're refugee, non-status, are facing a lot of problem. This is facing a two problem, migration and as well as for the housing problems.
Okay.
Yeah, I observe that every day I receive a call or in-person complaint that my rent is without my permission has increased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people who are living here are mostly are working in the warehouses and they have a family. So they said they're increasing a 1500, 1700. So I'm earning at supposedly $2,000. So it's beyond my capacity. So
warehouse work is very low paid.
Yeah.
Talking about like companies like Amazon or Dollarama.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Mostly people are working with Amazon, Dollarama, Good Foods, mm-hmm. or other warehouses. So they said where we can live. Mm-hmm. So they cannot, due to increasing of the rents, they cannot feed their family properly. They are under depressions. They have they say any time tenants, landlord says, go out from here if you're not paying. And they don't know law, rule and regulations because mostly people are illiterates. They don't know about language barrier. There's a lot of things. So every day I receive a complaint against their landlord. So this is, they're threatening us. If we not pay the rent, higher rent, they will throw out from the houses. So such kind of things regularly surrounding in the park, mostly Laval area, where the Indian people, Pakistani people, the Bangladeshi people are living. So so they're saying, we cannot concentrate our immigration status. We cannot concentrate our refugee status. We cannot concentrate our, housing problems. So what should we can do? So in this situation, we try to associate with the CAPE and amicably settle some things. So we are arranging the workshops so that the people can know about their rights, about the housing rights. So mostly people are knowing that we are going organizing a rally, mm-hmm. Also for the Bill 31. So such kind of things we are doing so that the people can gather and make understand.
Well, one of the few mechanisms that tenants have, which often is not super supportive of tenant rights,
yes.
is
yes.
To access the tribunal for housing.
Yes.
And on top of that, you're working with a community where there's a lot of language barriers.
Yeah, but a lot of language barriers. So that's why they not directly come to the, go to the courts. They don't know how to approach the government. So like a CAPE, so it's a mediator. So they, mm-hmm. We ascended our clients to the CAPE. Mm-hmm. So member to the CAPE. So CAPE can help to them. So resolve the problem. But these little bit things not a solution. So my observation is all the peoples, not on the Parkex, Laval, Montreal levels, so come together in a one umbrella and make a one huge campaign to the government so that we are people getting a low incomes and giving a higher rents. It's against our rights.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because international human rights says you have a right to live, you have a right to feed, you have a right for land, or you have a right to house. So, the lack of these things, we are under depression. So,
and that's one thing you've. Go ahead, Amy. It's just one thing that you've mentioned a lot, Gaurav, in our conversations and also in public presentations yeah. that you have. Talked about the effects on mental health of refugee claimants in relation to housing crisis.
Yes, it's not a story particular one person. It's a particularly mostly people's who are because they are there. And one more thing, so I also receive a complaint that we are paying $1,400 and we have a lot of problem in our house. So due to that reason, also they are not feeling well, and their health is go down day by day. So the tenant, landlord are not listening about this. Either there's a cockroach, either there's mosquitoes, either there's no water, good water coming. Mm-hmm. The hydrocubics bills are too much high. Mm-hmm. So apart from this, either they pay these things, or either they pay for the medical bills, or either they pay for where they can go. Yeah. So due to that, then physically, mentally,
got it.
Going day by down. You know that in the Park Acts, there's a lot of these things happening in the Park Acts. Mostly people try to commit a suicide. Yeah. A lot of people. You can heard in the Facebooks and news channels. So.
And I think often what I really appreciate about the work that you have all been addressing in this community radio broadcast is when we hear about Bill 31, often in mainstream media presentations, we hear like a response from a government official or maybe, you know, an opposition politician, but it's very rare to hear community voices. So thank you so much all for being here to talk about this reality. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the federal government and specifically, you know, there's a point that I think not a lot of people remember, which is under the Liberals and Conservatives, they've been sort of like playing this game around housing, around electoral cycles. But in the mid-1990s, the federal Liberals actually cut, in the context of the International Monetary Fund's structural adjustment proposals for Canada, they actually cut funding for co-op housing on a federal level. And, you know, most housing activists have really clearly stated that the proposed housing solutions from Trudeau's Liberals are basically nothing in terms of meeting the moment. So maybe, Drew, if you have any reflections about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the basic fact is that the federal Liberals and the federal Conservatives have consistently cut housing costs, like, or sorry, not costs, they've consistently cut housing funding. And obviously a big part of what made housing, like what made it possible to have options in the past, you know, in Canada and Canadian cities, was the significant investment in social housing, and the investment in, you know, creating a sort of an abundance of housing. And a lot of that's been, and co-op housing was obviously a big part of that mix. And so yeah, the kind of consistent cuts over the last really 30 years, you know, other than a small blip during the sort of 2008 crisis, you've seen like consistently not meeting the moment, and what's happened is you've created a sort of backlog of housing where housing has because there's no bottom, there's no sort of safety net in the housing market, where the low end of sort of, you know, mm-hmm. low income renters and so on are able to access housing. Everybody's being sort of driven into either homelessness or crunching into smaller spaces or going further and further away from the cities where their jobs are in order to be able to afford to have a place to stay. And that's obviously reached a total crisis point where there's a lot of anger. And so, of course, the Conservatives are capitalizing on that, but without actually doing anything, and if anything, the policies they're proposing are going to make the problem worse. And the Liberals are sort of doing what they do. And I think the fundamental issue on the federal scene is that you have two parties, the Conservatives and the Liberals, who are funded by the finance sector, who are funded by the sort of real estate investment sector, and by landlords. And in a lot of cases, they are actually landlords. Like the actual MPs are landlords, including Pierre Poilievre. And so you end up with a situation where everything that they do to address the housing crisis is within what's acceptable to those sectors. And so you end up with a lot of these sort of false solutions where the idea is that you're going to increase supply and somehow lower prices. But at the same time, like the whole premise of your policy is to keep making money for this small number of people and small number of investors. And one of the key sort of mechanisms that just totally hasn't been addressed by anybody. And sorry, I should say the NDP maybe isn't as backed by those sectors, the finance, real estate, and so on, but they appear to aspire to be. And so that's the problem at the federal level, is that they're trying to do these like very meager sort of measures, the things they're even putting forward that not even getting passed, because they're, you know, are like, you know, tax cuts on construction by private developers. It's not a massive investment in social housing, which is obviously, I think this is a sort of elephant in the room. Like, nobody's saying, oh, we actually just need to have a massive, multi tens of billions or hundreds of billions of dollars investment in social housing the way that we did when housing was actually accessible and affordable. And I think that comes down to social movements. Like, you have to have movements on the ground that are independent of these parties, certainly independent of the sort of prevailing homeowner-based supposed consensus in the media, and independent of the housing as a commodity, which is the sort of basic premise of all the so-called solutions that are happening. And so there's a huge gap there, and it's being filled emotionally by the conservatives, in the sense that they're reflecting the emotions of like what it's like to live in a housing crisis and not be able to access housing, but they're not doing any of the things that could actually result in things being any different. And so, yeah, I think I just wanted to note one other thing, which is that the real estate investment trusts are this mechanism where basically big pools of money, investors can like put in money into these real estate investment trusts, and the investment trusts don't pay some corporate taxes, and as a result have a sort of advantage in the market. But they basically are, their business model is buy up property, raise the rents, lower the services, lower the like maintenance, and make more profits as a result. And so they're leading these sort of like faceless mechanisms are, even if they're not owning the majority of the housing, they're sort of setting the tone for all the other landlords to do the same thing, raise prices and sort of cut maintenance, basically, so that people pay more to live in worse conditions. And I think that this is the sort of fundamental issue on the federal level that we're dealing with. None of this is being addressed, and I think, yeah, it's really up to social movements to bring the fight to the federal level and propose really clearly what's missing from the scene.
So I just encourage people to, Drew was speaking also about a context that is covered in some of the media projects that Drew works on. One is breachmedia.ca. Many people work on these initiatives. And the other is CUTV Montreal, Community University Television. And they're actually recording this conversation, so you'll be able to see it later at cutvmontreal.org. One thing that often happens, you know, I talk with a lot of people, especially artists. I'm a musician, so I have a lot of discussions with people and bring up some of the policy points that have been discussed, and people get overwhelmed. And I think one thing that is really always so insightful and amazing to highlight is the community organizing victories, and also the ways that spaces can be transformed. You know, Amy was talking about the organizing of CAPE here in Park X. And Faiz, I've talked to you quite a few times about this idea of trying to flip the narrative and to do something different and sort of go outside the box when it comes to thinking about how spaces could be, and this space we're sitting in, Brick by Brick, I know that you really focus a lot on community representation. And, you know, a lot of voices that maybe you would not often hear when talking about the housing crisis, immigrant voices, a lot of people from Park Extension. So, yeah, in the context of this conversation, can you maybe highlight a bit more about Brick by Brick and why, you know, the work that you're doing around representation and the voices that you can check out here at this space where we are now are so important?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a big question.
It is. Thank you.
So hopefully what I'm going to say kind of like circles back to, I think, what you wanted to respond with respect to what Drew was saying. And I think maybe it is connected in a way to what Drew was saying, because I feel like the whole issue of commodification and financialization and this idea of like homes being like something that is something to make money from. It's true that the people who benefit from it the most are like massive like investment pools and large interest associations of developers and real estate agents and you know, all that kind of jazz. But at the end of the day, that attitude or that ideology is a part of us in our communities. And I think it's important to have conversations around like, what are we doing for ourselves and what impact is that having on our neighbors, on the people that we're supposed to care about, that we do care about. And then sometimes we maybe don't understand, like, what is the relationship between the choices we make and the choices our neighbors have to make. So I'll give you, obviously this has to do with like, okay, when you own property and you want to sell it, or when you are trying to get out of the situation that you're in and you're focusing your energy on making more money, what sacrifices do you make? What do you do with the money when you are finally like, it's really important for me to own property. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, that we meet here, they're coming from a place of like, number one priority is securing their status in Canada. Example, like we had a public conversation. It was kind of like meant to bring people together around issues pertaining to like recent schools. And mistakenly, one of the organizers kind of said that it was badly worded invitation. But basically, a lot of people who came were under the impression that they were going to get letters of support for their immigration file. It was a misunderstanding. Normally, we do it not for participants, but for volunteers. So normally, our events will bring together like, you know, maybe 20 to 50 people. There were 300 people jammed in here. So I think that it's important, like, I think what Gaurav was saying is you've got to really look at everything, all the issues that people are facing together and how they connect to each other. The fact that people have to work a lot, the fact that their work is precarious makes it so they have less energy to put into housing. The fact that they have less energy to put into housing means that they're more separated from each other. They're less confident in seeking help. They have less support from their communities. They're further away from their places of worship where they can find support, further away from the community organizations, and they get into that depression, that cycle. So I think what we're trying to do is like break the isolation, basically, because at the very root of like social change and organizing for social change, leaving aside all the different strategies that we have in terms of bringing people together, showing them what their rights are, doing art, doing like a political work, or doing business, which is more of our focus here in terms of like the financial solutions, development of social housing, regardless of your strategy, at the end of the day, we really, really, we all have the power to help people around us get out of that place of isolation that makes it so that it's hard to mobilize, it's hard to organize, and it's hard to focus and put things into perspective. I don't know if that answers your question.
Thanks so much, Faiz, for sharing that. I wanted to go to Nathan about this issue of breaking isolation, because Nathan, you live in a co-op, which is Milton Park. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because there's also like a very real crisis when it comes to houseless people in Milton Park. And there's a lot of community organizing that's going on, both within the co-op you're part of, but also beyond. And this, of course, in the Milton Park context is, you know, impacting many communities, but Indigenous people are impacted in this particular area. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think a lot of the work happening in Milton Park is not simple. I think there's a big symbolism when it comes to the fact that all this crisis of unhoused people is happening at the gates of McGill University, essentially. So maybe can you just talk a bit about some of the community work that you're connected to in Milton Park, and you know that works across a number of issues.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, I guess I'd really like to highlight the work being done by Coma, which is a new organization in the neighborhood that has really trying to bring a collective and democratic approach to homelessness, and because like a lot of the services in homelessness are fairly top down, so the inspiring thing about the work is that they're trying to bring like a collective approach based on empowerment, also building community between housed and unhoused people, and also using the power of art and culture, and like, you know, a lot of homelessness in Milton Park is indigenous, and through like cultural activities, through soapstone carving, through storytelling, it's also a way, you know, to show that we all that housed and unhoused people can connect with each other, that indigenous and non-indigenous people, that, you know, we can through like culture, through it's we all have something to contribute, you know, and then in parallel also there's also been a struggle like in solidarity with the Mohawk
Lovers.
Thank you. Around the future of the Royal Victoria Hospital, around the fact that there's potentially unmarked indigenous graves on the site, and that the future of the site should really be decided in, you know, like obviously in consultation, but also more than consultation, like in active participation of the traditional custodians, yeah, you know, of the land that we're all on, and obviously should like serve should serve the urgent needs. So I also just wanted to, and they've been doing really great work in connecting the questions of housing, homelessness, urban development, and like the question of, you know, who has the power in Montreal, and who makes the decisions of, you know.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Nathan. So I just wanted to note a few things. Thank you, everybody, for sharing all these really important reflections on this broadcast. I would just note that we're streaming live on CKUT 90.3 FM here in Montreal, People Powered Radio. The F Files has agreed to also donate their share their half of this radio hour between 11 and 12 today. So thank you to the F-Files for being open to having a full hour broadcast of Free City Radio. And I just want to also thank all the groups that were involved in bringing this broadcast together. That includes Community University Television, Brick Pa Brick, Alternatives Montreal, the Social Justice Center at Concordia, CSE at Concordia, and Reverberation d'une crise, une enquête sonore des logements à Montréal. So these are some of many groups that are touching and addressing, interacting with this housing crisis. I would also note that in the space, there's two beautiful banners that are up that David Widgington has painted. I don't know if you want to describe the banners. No? Okay. So one says, banks rob us of their profits, smash brick a bank. I think I got that right. But they're beautiful banners with glitter and hand painted. The other says, tapette en feu contre le fascisme. So does somebody want to try to translate that? Hubert, thank you. Yes.
Well, it's like flaming fags, or like faggots on fire against fascism. Flaming faggots against fascism would be the official translation.
Okay, thanks for the official translation. So these are some of the visual culture of protest movements. So I think that, you know, one thing that has come up in a lot of these responses, and there's so many great things that were shared, is that despite these sort of like these layers of policy violence and capitalist economic real estate violence, all of you are connected to work that is trying to respond to this crisis, right? And trying to build connections between organizing. It's not simple, you know, and we realize the extent of the crisis. So it's not to both romanticize the work that you're doing, but it's to try to highlight the fact that all of you are involved in projects that are trying to confront this crisis in various ways, not just this week, but over a long period of time or in your respective work. So given we only have, you know, probably time for each person to share a bit more, maybe if you could share a bit about the importance of seeing this broader long-term struggle for housing justice and how it's connected to your respective work. Because at this moment, you know, and I think that's part of the reason why the energy came together for this broadcast, there is a struggle against Bill 31, and that's very important, you know, for people listening. And Flip actually asked that we announce the weekly protest, which is at Bear UCAM on Thursdays at
6 p.m.
Sharing that information. But there is that like mobilization point, but there's the work that happened before Bill 31 was announced and is generational also. So maybe could you each share a bit about your sort of work on this issue from a more long-term perspective, and why, like, sort of thinking about, you know, housing justice beyond, you know, like a particular set of legislation, but is connected to all levels of government, but also as connected to our work at a community-based level is important. So I guess we'll just go like this.
Well, pretty quickly, as an artist collective, what we've been trying to do mostly is to show like how the housing crisis is about the kind of life we want to live in Montreal. Do we, like, the housing crisis is putting us to work. It's saying like, well, if you want to live in the city, well, you have to like lose your life to work, not spending time with friends, with family, creative projects. This also touches like dignity of the people. So we've been trying to document that, to share, to express that to like maybe some parts of the population who are less connected with those realities, but also to offer a space for artists who are directly impacted by the housing crisis to reflect on that and to share their own fragility on those questions. It's a modest contribution. We also, as individuals, participate to other initiatives, but that's what Reverberation d'une crise is about. That's what we were bringing to the struggle recently.
Thank you.
So what we do in that, every month we conduct a workshops among the people who need it, and not for the worker rights, but also for the tenant rights. So we have what we had in past, we mostly had artists, so we conduct one play. So in the play medium, in their language, Hindi, Punjabi. So we produce a play and stage a play, such kind of things, which is related to their problems and how they can resolve their solutions. So this is a very easy way for us, and it is connected with our jobs. So people can understand and come together to understand the problem and send this message to the other people, so that we should get a lot of gathering when we're doing a rally or something else. So we're doing
theater performances. And one of them was actually here.
Yeah.
Where we are now in Bridge.
Yes,
Public.
Yes. So soon we are going to stage on the 4th of November, a play. It's basically related to housing problem, basically related to immigration, basically related to domestic violence for the women or something else. So we are doing, and so that people can understand, and because they don't know English and French, so that's why we are doing in Hindi and Punjabi.
Hindi and Punjabi. Yes, yes. And that's connected also to your community organizing work in India, where you did grassroots street theater.
Yes, 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 yes. So it is an easy way to understand. So we are also doing a workshops, rallies, so people can understand. But this is also the way the people can easily, street plays also. Mm-hmm. We are also doing a street plays, mm-hmm. so that the people can know their rights. Because if you are living in the house, you have a rights to raise the voice if your landlord increase your rent. So where you have to go, how can you make your raise your voice, and what is the application, what is the thing. So in this way, we can do that.
And you can learn more about the Immigrant Worker Center at iwc-cti.ca.
Yeah.
Amy?
So maybe just to touch upon some of the points that Hubert and Gaurav mentioned, while we definitely think it's important to fight Bill 31, I'd also maybe mention that a lot of the problems that tenants were facing go beyond that as well. Mm-hmm. Like in Park Extension, for example, tenants were it was already difficult to transfer your lease because of gentrification and housing discrimination in the neighborhood. Tenants were already facing abusive rent hikes and evictions before this law was tabled. People were already waiting on the social housing waiting list for sometimes more of a decade. I think for that, as Yuba mentioned, it's very much a question of who gets to live in the city. Is it really just for the rich and the people with the capacity to purchase property, or does it include immigrants, families, people living on low incomes too? Mm-hmm. So I think for that reason, I think it's important to keep the struggle going and to fight for broader demands. I would also maybe just to come back a little bit to your point around transforming spaces. I think we often tend to think of the housing crisis as being this kind of intractable thing, that once the forces of gentrification start to enter a neighborhood, that there's really nothing you can do about it. And I think if anything, organizing with tenants in Park X has demonstrated that that's not actually the case, that it is possible to push back real estate speculators. It is possible to claw back buildings and land and take them off the market. And I think it's important to keep those struggles going. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy, for taking the time to be here. So Committee d'Action de Parc Extension CAPE, and that's Committee d'Action parcx.org.
So we have a bit of a sad website situation for the moment. Hopefully it will not be that way forever. I encourage you to follow our Facebook page in the meantime.
Okay, respect.
Thank you.
Okay, so look out for Committee d'Action Parc Extension. They're doing amazing and important community-based work, a lot of it in collaboration with the Immigrant Workers Center. Drew, would you like to share some reflections?
Yeah, just briefly. Again, we're not housing organizations, but we're the CUTV, is open to any kind of collaborations to try to amplify the voices of any of these on-the-ground movements that are obviously crucial. And we can help make videos, we can facilitate live broadcasts and so on. So, get in touch.
CUTVMontreal.org. And having that sort of like production capacity is very important in terms of building counter narratives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here. Faiz, would you like to share a bit about where BrickPublic's at and sort of the long-term, some of the long-term points that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I feel like we're kind of like working synergetically with a lot of the folks that are around this table. Yeah, I mean, like art, work, play, tenants, rights, who gets to live in the city, who's entitled to community. These are big questions, and I think we're all kind of like working on them as best as we can. But I want to, I guess, like to answer your question, like you said earlier, like, well, you guys are doing great work, but, you know, not to romanticize your work, but you're doing great work. And I don't know, I feel like our work is romantic. I think that the reason why we do what we do, the reason why I do what I do, and the approach to the work that, you know, I'm doing is really around like self-actualization and pleasure and beauty and making the world a better place, you know? So really positivity, because these are big, big problems that are like systemic. And I think if you do it because you want to like change things, you run the risk of getting disappointed. If you do it because you want to do the right thing and enjoy yourself and build community in the process, then you'll probably go further. And so that's why I do what I do, and that's what we're going to keep doing.
BrickPublic community space is at brickpublic.com. Nathan?
Yeah, I wanted to also just explain a bit of the big community housing project in Milton Park, because that's what like, always inspired me to show that what ordinary people can do to take housing off the market and put it democratically in community hands. A big part of the neighborhood was going to be knocked down and turned into a high-rise hotel thing. And then neighbors in Milton Park organized against this and were able to save the... We're able to save a huge part of the housing and turn it into community controlled housing cooperatives and nonprofits. So it's 22 organizations with a population of around 1,200 who live in community controlled housing. They pay half to a third of market rent. And, you know, and this is something that shows us like we can, like Amy was talking about, we can take housing off the market and put it in community hands. And I guess the other thing I'd like to say is like if people want to get active on the housing crisis, get involved with organizations in your neighborhood, get involved in your local comité de logement. And you're also welcome to get involved in the tenants union, SLAM. Then they're doing great work in organizing, in helping neighbors organize and collectively to build power against and more than welcome to come by our co-working space, come hang out, and we can help. And if you're looking for work to get involved in, more than welcome to come by.
Thanks so much, Nathan. Milton Park Citizens Committee, ccmp-cpcc.com. Reverberation d'une crise. What's the website, Hubert?
It's
reverberationcriselogement.org.
So thank you so much, everybody, for being here. This has been a special edition broadcast of Free City Radio. And thanks again to the F-Files for opening up this full radio hour. We've been live for an hour now at Brick Pas Brick, and standing up for a place to stay. Movements confront the housing crisis and false solutions. A community radio and TV broadcast. Thanks, Drew, for the title also. Much respect. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you all. Thank you, Hubert, Gaurav, Amy, Drew, Faiz, and Nathan, and to David for bringing the banners, beautiful Spencer from CKUT, and everybody else for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan.
Good evening and welcome to Amandla, 1 hour of African Current Affairs brought to you out of Montreal, Canada, here on CKUT 90.3 FM. I am sitting virtually with Doug Miller. I'm Gwen Shulman. Doug, what do we have lined up for this week?
Well, we are great admirers of the website Africa is a Country and the people who work there and the kind of analysis they give. And this week, that what caught our eyes was the People's Cup, a podcast by William Shoki. They're based out of Johannesburg in this case, and he's talking about how finally the Confederation of African Football (CAF) has announced who the hosts of the 2025 and 2027 Africa Cup of Nations would be. So Morocco won the right to host the 2025 tournament, while the East Africa community seems to be coming together again. And there's Tanzania, Kenya, and Ghana, who will host the 2027 edition. It was originally meant to be held 2023 in Cote d'Ivoire, but was postponed to 2024 because of the weather.